in a cot. These might sleep on the street or in makeshift shacks, but if they could, they put a sleep sack between their bodies and the ground. The sacks, with their own strapping, fold to serve as packs during the day. They're light, tough, and able to survive most abuse. They're warm, even if you have to sleep on the concrete, but they're thin, more useful than comfortable. Curtis and I used to make love on a pallet of them. And I bought 3 oversized jackets of the same thin, breathing synthetic as the sleep sacks. They'll finish the job of keeping us warm at night as we move north. They look cheap and ugly, and that's good. They might not be stolen. That was the end of my money, the money I'd packed in my emergency pack. I haven't touched the money I took from the foot of the lemon tree. That I had split in half and put in 2 of my father's socks. I kept it pinned inside my jeans, invisible and unavailable to pickpockets. It isn't a lot of money, but it's more than I've ever had before, more than anyone could expect me to have. I pinned it where it is, rewrapped in plastic and secure in the socks on Saturday night when I had finished writing and still couldn't stop thinking and remembering and knowing there was nothing I could do about the past. Then I had a kind of tactile memory of grabbing the money packet and a handful of dirt and stuffing both into my pack. I had an incredible amount of nervous energy that was spending itself in jitteriness. My hands shook so that I could hardly find the money by feel in darkness. I made it an exercise in concentration to find the money, socks, and pins, divide the money in half, or as close to in half as I could without seeing, put it into the socks, and pin it in place. I checked it when I went out to urinate the next morning. I'd done a good job. The pins didn't show at all on the outside. I'd put them through the seams down near my ankles. Nothing dangling. No problems. I took my many purchases out to what was once the ground floor of a parking structure and was now a kind of semi-enclosed flea market. Many of the things dug out of ash heaps and landfills wind up for sale here. The rule is that if you buy something in the store, you can sell something of similar value in the structure. Your receipt, coded and dated, is your peddler's license. The structure was patrolled, though more to check these licenses than to keep anyone safe. Still, the structure was safer than the street. I found Harry and Zara sitting on our bundles, Harry waiting to go into the store, and Zara waiting for her license. They had put their backs against a wall of the store at a spot away from the street and away from the biggest crowd of buyers and sellers. I gave Zara the receipt and began to separate and pack our new supplies. We would leave as soon as Zara and Harry finished their buying and selling. We walked down to the freeway, the 118, and turned west. We would take the 118 to the 23 and the 23 to US 101. The 101 would take us up the coast toward Oregon. We became part of a broad river of people walking west on the freeway. Only a few straggled east against the current, east toward the mountains and the desert. Where were the westward walkers going? To something or just away from here? We saw a few trucks. Most of them run at night. Swarms of bikes or electric cycles and 2 cars. All of these had plenty of room to speed along the outer lanes past us. We're safer if we keep to the left lanes away from the on and off ramps. It's against the law in California to walk on the freeways, but the law is archaic. Everyone who walks, walks on the freeways sooner or later. Freeways provide the most direct routes between cities and parts of cities. Dad walked or bicycled on them often. Some prostitutes and peddlers of food, water, and other necessities live along the freeways in sheds and shacks, or in the open air. Beggars, thieves, and murderers live here too. But I've never walked a freeway before today. I found the experience both fascinating and frightening. In some ways, the scene reminded me of an old film I saw once, of a street in mid-20th century China, walkers, bicyclers, people carrying, pulling, pushing loads of all kinds. But the freeway crowd is a heterogeneous mass. Black and white, Asian and Latin, whole families are on the move, with babies on backs or perched atop loads in carts, wagons, or bicycle baskets, sometimes along with an old or handicapped person. Other old, ill, or handicapped people hobble along as best they could with the help of sticks or fitter companions. Many were armed with sheathed knives, rifles, and of course, visible, holstered handguns. The occasional passing cop paid no attention. Children cried, played, squatted, did everything except eat. Almost no one ate while walking. I saw a couple of people drink from canteens. They took quick, furtive gulps as though they were doing something shameful or something dangerous. A woman alongside us collapsed. I got no impression of pain from her, except at the sudden impact of her body weight on her knees. That made me stumble, but not fall. The woman sat where she had fallen for a few seconds, then lurched to her feet and began walking again, leaning forward under her huge pack. Almost everyone was filthy. Their bags and bundles and packs were filthy. They stank. And we, who have slept on concrete and ashes and dirt, and who have not bathed for 3 days, we fitted in pretty well. Only our new sleep sack packs gave us away as either new to the road or at least in possession of new stealables. We should have dirtied the packs a little before we got started. We will dirty them tonight. I'll see to it. There were a few young guys around, lean and quick, some filthy, some not dirty at all. Keiths. Today's Keiths. The ones who bothered me most weren't caring much. Some weren't carrying anything except weapons. Predators. They looked around a lot, stared at people, and the people looked away. I looked away. I was glad to see that Harry and Zara did the same. We didn't need trouble. If trouble came, I hoped we could kill it and keep walking. The gun was fully loaded now, and I wore it holstered, but half covered by my shirt. Harry bought himself a knife. The money he had snatched up as he ran from his burning house had not been enough to buy a gun. I could have bought a second gun, but it would have taken too much of my money, and we have a long way to go. Zara used the shoe money to buy herself a knife and a few personal things. I had refused my share of that money. She needed a few dollars in her pocket. The day she and Harry use their knives, I hope they kill. If they don't, I might have to escape the pain. And what will they think of that? They deserve to know that I'm a sharer. For their own safety, they should know. But I've never told anyone. Sharing is a weakness, a shameful secret. A person who knows what I am can hurt me, betray me. Disable me with a little effort. I can't tell, not yet. I'll have to tell soon, I know, but not yet. We're together, the three of us, but we're not a unit yet. Harry and I don't know Zara very well, nor she us. And none of us know what will happen when we're challenged. A racist challenge might force us apart. I want to trust these people, I like them, and they're all I have left. But I need more time to decide. It's no small thing to commit yourself to other people. You okay? Zara asked. I nodded. You look like hell. And you're so damned poker-faced all the time. Just thinking. I said, there's so much to think about now. She sighed her breath out in a near whistle. Yeah, I know. But keep your eyes open. You get too wrapped up in your own thinking, and you'll miss things. People get killed on freeways all the time. Chapter 16. Earthseed cast on new ground must first perceive that it knows nothing. Earthseed, the books of the living. Monday, August 2nd, 2027. Continued from notes expanded August 8th. Here are some of the things I've learned today. Walking hurts. I've never done enough walking to learn that before, but I know it now. It isn't only the blisters and sore feet, although we've got those. After a while, everything hurts. I think my back and shoulders would like to desert to another body. Nothing eases the pain except rest. Even though we got a late start, we stopped twice today to rest. We went off the freeway into hills or bushes to sit down, drink water, eat dried fruit and nuts. Then we went on. The days are long this time of year. Sucking on a plum or apricot pit all day makes you feel less thirsty, Zara told us that. When I was a kid, she said, there were times when I would put a rock in my mouth. Anything to feel better. It's a cheat, though. If you don't drink enough water, you'll die, no matter how you feel. All three of us walked along with seeds in our mouths after our first stop, and we felt better. We drank only during our stops in the hills. It's safer that way. Also, cold camps are safer than cheery campfires. Yet tonight, we cleared some ground, dug into a hillside, and made a small fire in the hollow. There we cooked some of our acorn meal with nuts and fruit. It was wonderful. Soon we'll run out of it, and we'll have to survive on beans, cornmeal, oats, expensive stuff from stores. Acorns are home food, and home is gone. Fires are illegal. You can see them flickering all over the hills, but they are illegal. Everything is so dry that there's always a danger of campfires getting away from people and taking out a community or two. It does happen. But people who have no homes will build fires. Even people like us, who know what fire can do, will build them. They give comfort, hot food, and a false sense of security. While we were eating, and even after we'd finished, people drifted over and tried to join us. Most were harmless and easily gotten rid of. Three claimed they just wanted to get warm. The sun was still up, red on the horizon, and it was far from cold. Three women wanted to know whether two studs like Harry and me didn't need more than one woman. The women who asked this may have been cold, considering how few clothes they had on. It's going to be strange for me, pretending to be a man. Couldn't I just roast this potato in your coals? An old man asked, showing us a withered potato. We gave him some fire and sent him away, and watched to see where he went, since a burning brand could be either a weapon or a major distraction if he had friends hiding. It's crazy to live this way, suspecting helpless old people. Insane. But we need our paranoia to keep us alive. Hell, Harry wanted to let the old guy sit with us. It took Zara and me together to let him know that wasn't going to happen. Harry and I have been well fed and protected all our lives. We're strong and healthy and better educated than most people our age, but we're stupid out here. We want to trust people. I fight against the impulse. Harry hasn't learned to do that yet. We argued about it afterward, low-voiced, almost whispering. Nobody's safe, Zara told him. No matter how pitiful they look, they can steal you naked. Little kids, skinny and big-eyed, will make off with all your money, water, and food. I know. I used to do it to people. Maybe they died, I don't know, but I didn't die. Harry and I both stared at her. We knew so little about her life. But to me, at that moment, Harry was our most dangerous question mark. You're strong and confident, I said to him. You think you can take care of yourself out here, and maybe you can. But think what a stab wound or a broken bone would mean out here. Disablement, slow death from infection or starvation, no medical care, nothing. He looked at me as though he wasn't sure he wanted to know me anymore. What, then? He asked. Everyone's guilty until proven innocent. Guilty of what? And how do they prove themselves to you? I don't give a piss whether they're innocent or not, Zara said. Let them tend to their own business. Harry, your mind is still back in the neighborhood, I said. You still think a mistake is when your father yells at you, or you break a finger or chip a tooth or something. Out here, a mistake, one mistake, and you may be dead. Remember that guy today. What if that happened to us? We had seen a man robbed, a chubby guy of 35 or 40 who was walking along eating nuts out of a paper bag. Not smart. A little kid of 12 or 13 snatched the nuts and ran off with them. While the victim was distracted by the little kid, two bigger kids tripped him, cut his pack straps, dragged the pack off his back, and ran off with it. The whole thing happened so fast that no one could have interfered if they'd wanted to. No one tried. The victim was unhurt except for bruises and abrasions, the sort of thing I had put up with every day back in the neighborhood. But the victim's supplies were gone. If he had a home nearby and other supplies, he would be all right. Otherwise, his only way of surviving might be to rob someone else, if he could. Remember? I asked Harry. We don't have to hurt anyone unless they push us into it. But we don't dare let our guard down. We can't trust people. Harry shook his head. What if I thought that way when I pulled that guy off Zara? I held on to my temper. Harry, you know I don't mean we shouldn't trust or help each other. We know each other. We've made a commitment to travel together. I'm not sure we do know each other. I am. And we can't afford your denial. You can't afford it. He just stared at me. Out here, you adapt to your surroundings or you get killed, I said. That's obvious. Now he did look at me as though I were a stranger. I looked back, hoping I knew him as well as I thought I did. He had a brain, and he had courage. He just didn't want to change. Do you want to break off with us? Zara asked. Go your own way without us? His gaze softened as he looked at her. No, he said, of course not. But we don't have to turn into animals. For God's sake. In a way we do, I said. We're a pack. The three of us. And all those other people out there aren't in it. If we're a good pack and we work together, we have a chance. You can be sure we aren't the only pack out here. He leaned back against a rock and said with amazement, You damn sure talk macho enough to be a guy. I almost hit him. Maybe Zara and I would be better off without him. But no, that wasn't true. Numbers mattered. Friendship mattered. One real male presence mattered. Don't repeat that, I whispered, leaning close to him. Never say that again. There are other people all over these hills. You don't know who's listening. You give me away and you weaken yourself. That reached him. Sorry, he said. It's bad out here, Zara said. But most people make it if they're careful. People weaker than us make it, if they're careful. Harry gave a wan smile. I hate this world already, he said. It's not so bad if people stick together. He looked from her to me and back to her again. He smiled at her and nodded. It occurred to me then that he liked her, was attracted to her. That could be a problem for her later. She was a beautiful woman, and I would never be beautiful, which didn't bother me. Boys had always seemed to like me, but Zara's looks grabbed male attention. If she and Harry get together, she could wind up carrying two heavy loads northward. I was lost in thought about the two of them when Zara nudged me with her foot. Two big, dirty-looking guys were standing nearby, watching us, watching Zara in particular. I stood up, feeling the others stand with me, flanking me. These guys were too close to us. They meant to be too close. As I stood up, I put my hand on the gun. Yeah, I said. What do you want? Not a thing, one of them said, smiling at Zara. Both wore big holstered knives, which they fingered. I drew the gun. Good deal, I said. Their smiles vanished. What, you going to shoot us for standing here? The talkative one said. I thumbed the safety. I would shoot the talker, the leader. The other one would run away. He already wanted to run away. He was staring open-mouthed at the gun. By the time I collapsed, he would be gone. Hey, no trouble. The talker raised his hands, backing away. Take it easy, man. I let them go. I think it would have been better to shoot them. I'm afraid of guys like that. Guys looking for trouble, looking for victims. But it seems I can't quite shoot someone just because I'm afraid of him. I killed a man on the night of the fire, and I haven't thought much about it, but this was different. It was like what Harry said about stealing. I've heard, thou shalt not kill all my life, but when you have to, you kill. I wonder what Dad would say about that. But then, he was the one who taught me to shoot. We'd better keep a damn good watch tonight, I said. I looked at Harry and was glad to see that he looked the way I probably had a moment before, mad and worried. Let's pass your watch and my gun around, I told him. 3 hours per watch. You would have done it, wouldn't you? He asked. It sounded like a real question. I nodded. Wouldn't you? Yes. I would have wanted to. But those guys were out for fun. Their idea of fun, anyway. He glanced at Zara. He had pulled one man off her and taken a beating for it. Maybe the obvious threat to her would keep him alert. Anything that would keep him alert couldn't be all bad. I looked at Zara, kept my voice very low. You never went shooting with us, so I have to ask. Do you know how to use this? Yeah, she said. Richard let his older kids go out, but he wouldn't let me. Before he bought me, though, I was a good shot. Her alien passed again. It distracted me for a moment. I had been waiting to ask her how much a person costs these days. And she had been sold by her mother to a man who couldn't have been much more than a stranger. He could have been a maniac, a monster. And my father used to worry about future slavery and debt slavery. Had he known? He couldn't have. Have you used a gun like this before? I asked. I re-engaged the safety and handed it to her. Hell yeah, she said, examining it. I like this, it's heavy, but if you shoot somebody with it, they go down. She released the clip, checked it, reinserted it, rammed it home, and handed it back. I wish I could have practiced with you all, she said. I always wanted to. Without warning, I felt a pang of loneliness for the burned neighborhood. It was almost a physical pain. I had been desperate to leave it, but I had expected it still to be there, changed, but surviving. Now that it was gone, there were moments when I couldn't imagine how I was going to survive without it. You guys get some sleep, I said. I'm too wound up to sleep now. I'll take the first watch. We should gather more wood for the fire first, Harry said. It's burning low. Let it go out, I said. It's a spotlight on us, and it messes up our night vision. Other people can see us long before we see them. And sit here in the dark, he said. It wasn't a protest. At worst, it was grudging agreement. I'll take the watch after you, he said, lying back and pulling up his sleep sack and positioning the rest of his gear to serve as a pillow. As an afterthought, he took off his wristwatch and gave it to me. It was a gift from my mother, he said. I know. I'll take care of it, I told him. He nodded. You be careful, he said, and closed his eyes. I put the watch on, pulled the elastic of my sleeve down over it so that the glow of the dial wouldn't be visible by accident, and sat back against the hill to make a few quick notes. While there was still some natural light, I could write and watch. Zara watched me for a while, then laid her hand on my arm. Teach me to do that, she whispered. I looked at her, not understanding. Teach me to read and write. I was surprised, but I shouldn't have been. Where in a life like hers had there been time or money for school? And once Richard Moss bought her, her jealous co-wives wouldn't have taught her. You should have come to us back in the neighborhood, I said. We would have set up lessons for you. Richard wouldn't let me. He said I already knew enough to suit him. I groaned. I'll teach you. We can start tomorrow morning if you want. Okay. She gave me an odd smile and began ordering her bag and her few possessions bundled in my scavenged pillowcase. She lay down in her bag and turned on her side to look at me. I didn't think I'd like you, she said. Preacher's kid, all over the place, teaching, telling everybody what to do, sticking your damn nose in everything. But you ain't bad. I went from surprise into amusement of my own. Neither are you, I said. You didn't like me either? Her turn to be surprised. You were the best-looking woman in the neighborhood. No, I wasn't crazy about you. And remember a couple of years ago, when you tried your hardest to make me throw up while I was learning to clean and skin rabbits? Why'd you want to learn that anyway? She asked. Blood, guts, worms. I just figured there she goes again, sticking her nose where it don't belong. Well, let her have it. I wanted to know that I could do that. Handle a dead animal, skin it, butcher it, treat its hide to make leather. I wanted to know how to do it. And that I could do it without getting sick. Why? Because I thought someday I might have to. And we might out here. Same reason I put together an emergency pack and kept it where I could grab it. I wondered about that, about you having all that stuff from home, I mean. At first I thought maybe you got it all when you went back, but no, You were ready for all the trouble. You saw it coming. No, I shook my head, remembering no one could have been ready for that. But I thought something would happen someday. I didn't know how bad it would be or when it would come. But everything was getting worse. The climate, the economy, crime, drugs, you know. I didn't believe we would be allowed to sit behind our walls, looking clean and fat and rich to the hungry, thirsty, homeless, jobless, filthy people outside. She turned again and lay on her back, staring upward at the stars. I should have seen some of that stuff, she said, but I didn't. Those big walls, and everybody had a gun. There were guards every night. I thought we were so strong. I put my notebook and pen down, sat on my sleep sack, and put my own pillowcase bundle behind me. Mine was lumpy and uncomfortable to lean on. I wanted it uncomfortable. I was tired. Everything ached. Given a little comfort, I would fall asleep. The sun was down now, and our fire had gone out except for a few glowing coals. I drew the gun and held it in my lap. If I needed it at all, I would need it fast. We weren't strong enough to survive slowness or stupid mistakes. I sat where I was for 3 weary, terrifying hours. Nothing happened to me, but I could see and hear things happening. There were people moving around the hills, sometimes silhouetting themselves against the sky as they ran or walked over the tops of hills. I saw groups and individuals. Twice, I saw dogs, distant but alarming. I heard a lot of gunfire, individual shots, and short bursts of automatic weapons fire. The last and the dogs worried me, scared me. A pistol would be no protection against a machine gun or automatic rifle, and dogs might not know enough to be afraid of guns. Would a pack keep coming if I shot 2 or 3 of its members? I sat in a cold sweat, longing for walls, or at least for another magazine or 2 for the gun. It was nearly midnight when I woke Harry, gave him the gun and the watch, and made him as uncomfortable as I could by warning him about the dogs, the gunfire, and the many people who wandered around at night. He did look awake and alert enough when I lay down. I fell asleep at once. Aching and exhausted, I found the hard ground as welcoming as my bed at home. A shout awoke me. Then I heard gunfire, several single shots, thunderous and nearby. Harry? Something fell across me before I could get out of my sleep sack, something big and heavy. It knocked the breath out of me. I struggled to get it off me, knowing that it was a human body, dead or unconscious. As I pushed at it and felt its heavy beard stubble and long hair, I realized it was a man and not Harry, some stranger. I heard scrambling and thrashing near me. There were grunts and sounds of blows, a fight. I could see them in the darkness, 2 figures struggling on the ground. The one on the bottom was Harry. He was fighting someone over the gun, and he was losing. The muzzle was being forced toward him. That couldn't happen. We couldn't lose the gun or Harry. I took a small granite boulder from our fire pit, set my teeth, and brought it down with all my strength on the back of the intruder's head, and I brought myself down. It wasn't the worst pain I had ever shared, but it came close. I was worthless after delivering that one blow. I think I was unconscious for a while. Then Zara appeared from somewhere, feeling me, trying to see me. She wouldn't find a wound, of course. I sat up, fending her off, and saw that Harry was there too. "Are they dead?" I asked. "Never mind them," he said. "Are you all right?" I got up, swaying from the residual shock of the blow. I felt sick and dizzy. and my head hurt. A few days before, Harry had made me feel that way, and we'd both recovered. Did that mean the man I'd hit would recover? I checked him. He was still alive, unconscious, not feeling any pain now. What I was feeling was my own reaction to the blow I'd struck. "The other one's dead," Harry said. "This one, well, you caved in the back of his head. I don't know why he's still alive." "Oh, no," I whispered. "Oh, hell." And then to Harry, "Give me the gun." "Why?" he asked. My fingers had found the blood and broken skull, soft and pulpy at the back of the stranger's head. Harry was right. He should have been dead. "Give me the gun," I repeated, and held out a bloody hand for it. "Unless you want to do this yourself." "You can't shoot him. You just can't. I hope you'd find the courage to shoot me if I were like that, and out here with no medical care to be had. We shoot him, or we leave him here alive. How long do you think it will take him to die?" "Maybe he won't die." I went to my pack, struggling to navigate without throwing up. I pulled it away from the dead man, groped within it, and found my knife. It was a good knife, sharp and strong. I flicked it open and cut the unconscious man's throat with it. Not until the flow of blood stopped did I feel safe. The man's heart had pumped his life away into the ground. He couldn't regain consciousness and involve me in his agony. But of course, I was far from safe. Perhaps the last two people from my old life were about to leave me. I had shocked and horrified them. I wouldn't blame them for leaving. "Strip the bodies," I said. "Take what they have. Then we'll put them into the scrub oaks down the hill where we gathered wood." I searched the man I had killed, found a small amount of money in his pants pocket, and a larger amount in his right sock. Matches, a packet of almonds, a packet of dried meat, and a packet of small, round, purple pills. I found no knife, no weapon of any kind. So this was not one of the pair that sized us up earlier in the night. I hadn't thought so. Neither of them had been long-haired. Both of these were. I put the pills back in the pocket I had taken them from. Everything else I kept. The money would help sustain us. The food might or might not be edible. I would decide that when I could see it clearly. I looked to see what the others were doing, and was relieved to find them stripping the other body. Harry turned it over, then kept watch as Zara went through the clothing, shoes, socks, and hair. She was even more thorough than I had been. With no hint of squeamishness, she hauled off the man's clothing and examined its greasy pockets, seams, and hems. I got the feeling she had done this before. "Money, food, and a knife," she whispered at last. "The other one didn't have a knife," I said, crouching beside them. "Harry, what?" "He had one," Harry whispered. "He pulled it when I yelled for them to stop. It's probably on the ground somewhere. Let's put these two down in the oaks." "You and I can do it," I said. "Give Zara the gun. She can guard us." I was glad to see him hand her the gun without protest. He hadn't made a move to hand it to me when I asked, but that had been different. We took the bodies down to the scrub oaks and rolled them into cover. Then we kicked dirt over all the blood we could see, and the urine that one of the men had released. That wasn't enough. By mutual consent, we moved camp. This meant nothing more than gathering our bundles and sleep sacks and carrying them over the next low ridge and out of sight of where we had been. If you camped on a hill between any two of the many low, rib-like ridges, you could have almost the privacy of a big, open-topped, three-walled room. You were vulnerable from hill or ridge tops, but if you camped on the ridges, you would be noticed by far more people. We chose a spot between two ridges, settled, and sat silent for some time. I felt set apart. I knew I had to speak, and I was afraid that nothing I could say would help. They would leave me. In disgust, in distrust, in fear. They might decide that they couldn't travel with me any longer. Best to try to get ahead of them. "I'm going to tell you about myself," I said. "I don't know whether it will help you to understand me, but I have to tell you. You have a right to know." And in low whispers, I told them about my mother, my biological mother, and about my sharing. When I finished, there was another long silence. Then Zara spoke, and I was so startled by the sound of her soft voice that I jumped. "So when you hit that guy," she said, "it was like you hitting yourself?" "No," I said. "I don't get the damage, just the pain. But, I mean, it felt like you hit yourself?" I nodded. "Close enough. When I was little, I used to bleed along with people if I hurt them, or even if I saw them hurt. I haven't done that for a few years." "But if they're unconscious or dead, you don't feel anything?" "That's right." "So that's why you killed that guy?" "I killed him because he was a threat to us. To me in a special way, but to you too." "What could we have done about him? Abandon him to the flies, the ants, and the dogs?" "You might have been willing to do that, but would Harry?" "Could we stay with him? For how long? To what purpose? Or would we dare to hunt up a cop and try to report seeing a guy hurt without involving ourselves? Cops are not trusting people. I think they would want to check us out, hang on to us for a while, maybe charge us with attacking the guy and killing his friend." I turned to look at Harry, who had not said a word. "What would you have done?" I asked. "I don't know," he said, his voice hard with disapproval. "I only know I wouldn't have done what you did." "I wouldn't have asked you to do it," I said. "I didn't ask you. But Harry, I would do it again. I might have to do it again. That's why I'm telling you this." I glanced at Zara. "I'm sorry I didn't tell you before. I knew I should, but talking about it is hard, very hard. I've never told anyone before. Now," I took a deep breath, "now everything's up to you." "What do you mean?" Harry demanded. I looked at him, wishing I could see his expression well enough to know whether this was a real question. I didn't think it was. I decided to ignore him. "So, what do you think?" I asked, looking at Zara. Neither of them said anything for a minute. Then Zara began to speak. Began to say such terrible things in that soft voice of hers. After a moment, I wasn't sure she was talking to us. "My mama took drugs, too," she said. "Shit. Where I was born, everybody's mama took drugs and hoarded to pay for them and had babies all the time and threw them away like trash when they died. Most of the babies did die from the drugs or accidents or not having enough to eat or being left alone so much. Or from being sick. They were always getting sick. Some of them were born sick. They had sores all over. Or big things in their eyes. Tumors, you know? Or no legs or fits or can't breathe right. All kinds of things. And some of the ones who lived were dumb as dirt. Can't think, can't learn. Just sit around, 9, 10 years old, peeing in their pants, rocking back and forth, and dripping spit down their chins. There's a lot of them. She took my hand and held it. You ain't got nothing wrong with you, Lauren. Nothing worth worrying about. That Paracetco shit was baby's milk. How was it that I had not gotten to know this woman back in the neighborhood? I hugged her. She seemed surprised, then hugged back. We both looked at Harry. He sat still, near us, but far from us, from me. What would you do, he asked, if that guy only had a broken arm or leg? I groaned, thinking about pain. I already knew more than I wanted to about how broken bones feel. I think I'd let him go, I said, and I'm sure I would be sorry for it. It would be a long time before I stopped looking over my shoulder. You wouldn't kill him to escape the pain. I never killed anyone back in the neighborhood to escape pain, but a stranger. I've said what I would do. What if I broke my arm? Then I might not be much good to you. I would be having trouble with my arm, too, after all. But we'd have two good arms between us. I sighed. We grew up together, Harry. You know me. You know what kind of person I am. I might fail you, but if I could help myself, I wouldn't betray you. I thought I knew you. I took his hands, looked at their big, pale, blunt fingers. They had a lot of strength in them, I knew, but I'd never seen him use it to bully anyone. He was worth some trouble, Harry was. No one is who we think they are, I said. That's what we get for not being telepathic. But you've trusted me so far, and I've trusted you. I've just put my life in your hands. What are you going to do? Was he going to abandon me now to my infirmity? Instead of me maybe abandoning him at some future time due to a theoretical broken arm. And I thought, one oldest kid to another, Harry, would that be responsible behavior? He took his hands back. Well, I did know you were a manipulative bitch, he said. Zara smothered a laugh. I was surprised. I'd never heard him use the word before. I heard it now as a sound of frustration. He wasn't going to leave. He was the last bit of home that I didn't have to give up yet. How did he feel about that? Was he angry with me for almost breaking up the group? He had reason to be, I suppose. I don't understand how you could have been like this all the time, he said. How could you hide your sharing from everyone? My father taught me to hide it, I told him. He was right. In this world, there isn't any room for housebound, frightened, squeamish people, and that's what I might have become if everyone had known about me. All the other kids, for instance, little kids are vicious, haven't you noticed? But your brothers must have known. My father put the fear of God into them about it. He could do that. As far as I know, they never told anyone. Keith used to play funny tricks on me, though. So, you faked everyone out. You must be a hell of an actor. I had to learn to pretend to be normal. My father kept trying to convince me that I was normal. He was wrong about that, but I'm glad he taught me the way he did. Maybe you are normal. I mean, if the pain isn't real, then maybe. Maybe this sharing thing is all in my head? Of course it is. And I can't get it out. Believe me, I'd love to. There was a long silence. Then he asked, What do you write in your book every night? Interesting shift. My thoughts, I said. The day's events, my feelings. Things you can't say, he asked. Things that are important to you. Yes. Then let me read something. Let me know something about the you that hides. I feel as though you're a lie. I don't know you. Show me something of you that's real. What a request. Or was it a demand? I would have given him money to read and digest some of the earthseed portions of my journal. But he had to be eased into them. If he read the wrong thing, it would just increase the distance between us. The risks you asked me to take, Harry. But, yes, I'll show you some of what I've written. I want to. It'll be another first for me. All I ask is that you read what I show you aloud, so Zara can hear it. As soon as it's light, I'll show you. When it was light, I showed him this. All that you touch, you change. All that you change, changes you. The only lasting truth is change. God is change. Last year, I chose these lines to be the first page of the first book of Earthseed, the Books of the Living. These lines say everything. Everything. Imagine him asking me for it. I must be careful. Chapter 17. Embrace diversity. Unite, or be divided, robbed, ruled, killed by those who see you as prey. Embrace diversity, or be destroyed. Earthseed, the Books of the Living. Tuesday, August 3rd, 2027. From Notes Expanded, August 8th. There's a big fire in the hills to the east of us. We saw it begin as a thin, dark column of smoke rising into an otherwise clear sky. Now it's massive. A hillside or two. Several buildings. Many houses. Our neighborhood again. We kept looking at it, then looking away. Other people dying, losing their families, their homes. Even when we had walked past it, we looked back. Had the people with painted faces done this too? Zara was crying as she walked along, cursing in a voice so soft that I could hear only a few of the bitter words. Earlier today, we left the 118 freeway to look for and finally connect with the 23. Now we're on the 23, with charred, overgrown wilderness on one side and neighborhoods on the other. We can't see the fire itself now. We passed it, come a long way from it, put hills between it and us as we headed southward toward the coast. But we can still see the smoke. We didn't stop for the night until it was almost dark and we were all tired and hungry. We've camped away from the freeway, on the wilderness side of it, out of sight, but not out of hearing of the shuffling hordes of people on the move. I think that's a sound we'll hear for the whole of our journey, whether we stop in Northern California or go through to Canada. So many people hoping for so much up where it still rains every year, and an uneducated person might still get a job that pays in money instead of beans, water, potatoes, and maybe a floor to sleep on. But it's the fire that holds our attention. Maybe it was started by accident. Maybe not. But still, people are losing what they might not be able to replace. Even if they survive, insurance isn't worth much these days. People on the highway, shadowy in the darkness, had begun to reverse the flow, to drift northward, to find a way to the fire. Best to be early for the scavenging. "Should we go?" Zara asked, her mouth full of dried meat. "We built no fire tonight. Best for us to vanish into the darkness and avoid guests. We had put a tangle of trees and bushes at our back and hoped for the best."
"You mean go back and rob those people?"
Harry demanded.
"Scavenge," she said. "Take what people don't need no more. If you're dead, you don't need much."
"We should stay here and rest," I said. "We're tired. And it will be a long time before things are cool enough over there to allow scavenging. It's a long way off anyway." Zara sighed.
"Yeah.
We don't have to do things like that anyway," Harry said. Zara shrugged.
"Every little bit helps.
You were crying about that fire a while ago."
"Uh-uh."
Zara drew her knees up against her body. "I wasn't crying about that fire. I was crying about our fire and my BB and thinking about how much I hate people who set fires like that. I wish they would burn. I wish I could burn them. I wish I could just take them and throw them in the fire like they did my BB." And she began to cry again. And he held her, apologizing and, I think, shedding a few tears himself. Grief hit like that. Something would remind us of the past, of home, of a person, and then we would remember it was all gone. The person was dead, or probably dead. Everything we'd known and treasured was gone. Everything except the three of us. And how well were we doing? "I think we should move," Harry said some time later. He was still sitting with Zara, one arm around her, and she seemed to welcome the contact.
"Why?"
she asked.
"I want to be higher, closer to the level of the freeway, or above it. I want to be able to see the fire if it jumps the freeway and spreads toward us. I want to see it before it gets too close. Fire moves fast."
I groaned. "You're right," I said, "but moving now that it's dark is risky. We could lose this place and find nothing better."
"Wait here," he said, and got up and walked away into the darkness.
I had the gun, so I hoped he kept his knife handy, and I hoped he wouldn't need it. He was still raw about what had happened the night before. He had killed a man. That bothered him. I had killed a man in a much more cold-blooded way, according to him, and it didn't bother me. But my cold-bloodedness bothered him. He wasn't a sharer. He didn't understand that to me, pain was the evil. Death was an end to pain. No Bible verses were going to change that as far as I was concerned. He didn't understand sharing. Why should he? Most people knew little or nothing about it. On the other hand, my Earthseed verses had surprised him and I think pleased him a little. I wasn't sure whether he'd liked the writing or the reasoning, but he liked having something to read and talk about. "Poetry?" he said this morning as he looked through the pages I showed him, pages of my Earthseed notebook, as it happened. "I never knew you cared about poetry." "A lot of it isn't very poetical," I said, "but it's what I believe, and I've written it as well as I could." I showed him four verses in all, gentle, brief verses that might take hold of him without his realizing it, and live in his memory without his intending that they should. Bits of the Bible had done that to me, staying with me even after I stopped believing. I gave to Harry, and through him, to Zara, thoughts I wanted them to keep. But I couldn't prevent Harry from keeping other things as well. His new distrust of me, for instance, also his new dislike. I was not quite Lauren Olamina to him any longer,
I had seen that in his expression off and on all day. Odd. Joanne hadn't liked her glimpse of the real me either. On the other hand, Zara didn't seem to mind. But then, she had known me very well at home. What she learned now, she could accept without feeling lied to.